Good morning. Congressman David Young is a sixth-generation Iowan with deep roots in the Hawkeye State. He grew up in Van Meter, and later his family moved to Johnston. After graduating from Drake University, he began his life as a public servant, working as a legislative and policy aide in Iowa and on Capitol Hill. Most recently, he has spent 7 years as chief of staff to Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. David was elected in 2014 to the U.S. House of Representatives and serves on behalf of the people of Iowa, the 3rd Congressional District, working to make government more efficient, effective, and accountable and transparent. He is a member of the U.S. House Appropriations Committee and is assigned to 3 subcommittees of great importance to Iowans: agriculture, homeland security, and transportation, housing, and urban development. In a recent webmail that many of the congressman's constituents received, and I quote, these are David's words, "In Iowa, we understand that you don't get paid until the job's done. That's just common sense. And in Washington, that should work the same way. So when Congress failed to pass a budget, I was the only member who asked for my paycheck to be withheld. No budget, no pay. It's that simple." So I understand, with a tight budget, you're welcome to another free breakfast if you'd like. Please join me in welcoming Congressman David Young.
Well, great. I appreciate you. I appreciate the invitation, and I'm so happy that I was able to attend, because you may be wondering, what am I doing here on a Friday morning and not in Washington, D.C.? We're on our pre-Independence Day, 4th of July kind of work period and break. And when we are not in session in D.C., I am home. Home is Van Meter, born and raised there. As Bill said, when I was a sophomore, my parents moved to Johnston, and so I graduated from Johnston High School when it was a lot smaller. And then Drake University, where I majored in English. And then after that, I worked at Norwest Financial, if you remember Norwest. And then Wells Fargo, it turned into. And so, as Bill said, the last 7 years, I was Senator Grassley's chief of staff. And it's just a real honor to be here today and to serve you. And I want to tell you a little bit about this district, if you don't know about the 3rd District, and where it goes and what it all entails. So I call it the Sweet 16, because there's 16 counties here in the 3rd District, and it is Polk County, and go west, basically down Interstate 80, and you take all the way down to Council Bluffs, Pottawatomie County, and then go down to the Missouri border. Very rural, very urban, right? So you have the most populated county in the state is in this district, Polk County, and then you have the least populated county in the state is in this district. And what county is that?
Fremont.
You get it right, you get a set of steak knives. Adams County, where the county seat is Corning, birthplace of Johnny Carson. There are more deer than people in Adams County, and I've seen a lot of them on the roadside, that's for sure. But I get to every county every month, and it's the pledge and promise that I made to the district that I'm going to come home, I'm going to stay in touch. I'm going to meet with anybody and everybody, because this district is 700,000 plus people, and I represent the whole district. And so when the invitations come out, if it works on the schedule, we're there. You know, we don't vet who's going to be there, what maybe leaning political affiliation they may be. I believe that everybody has a right to be heard, and it, particularly when it comes to the First Amendment. You know, religion, speech, press, assembly. But the right to petition your government, the part of the First Amendment that few people kind of recognize or pay attention to sometimes, is very important to me, and it should be very, very important to you. The right to petition your government and to be heard. So Bill mentioned that I'm on the House Appropriations Committee, and you may wonder, well, what in the big deal, Dave? What's the big deal about that? Especially in the days when earmarks are over, those may come back someday, and I'm open to that debate. But the Appropriations Committee is the committee that funds the federal government. Article 1, Section 8. Congress has the power to fund the federal government. And so being on that committee, you get a really good perspective. You get a close-up look, maybe too close sometimes, unfortunately, about how your federal dollars, your taxpayer dollars, are spent. And so you have the heads of departments and agencies and commissions and bureaus. They come up to Capitol Hill in front of the Appropriations Committee, and you really get a chance to question them and to grill them and to have them justify why they need to spend what they say they need to spend, and really look for that efficiency, accountability, transparency, because you want a more effective government with your taxpayer dollars. There's a lot of duplicative programs. You see, I know the federal government is not a profit-making private entity. We all know that. Government is government. But I sure wish they would adopt some of the things that are in the private sector, kind of management tools, that would make things more accountable to the taxpayer. And I am on the, and just the history of the Appropriations Committee, why is it important to be on there as well for somebody from Iowa? Well, as you know, Tom Latham was on the House Appropriations Committee. In the Senate, Tom Harkin was on the Senate Appropriations Committee. Neil Smith was on the Appropriations Committee for a long time. And so Iowa always had a voice on that committee. I think it's important to have that kind of Midwest, heartland, rural perspective of things, especially when it comes to, you know, funding the federal government. You want to make sure that our way of life, our priorities here, are not forgotten about, and you don't have that committee stacked with people from New York or California and getting their perspective weighed more heavily than folks in the Midwest. I'm on the subcommittee on agriculture, as you mentioned. As you know, agriculture is very important to our state. Homeland Security, that subcommittee as well. We have our challenges there, definitely, as you know about. And also Transportation, Housing and Urban Development Subcommittee as well, which is very important to our state and anywhere as well, but it's specifically in Central Iowa, it's very important. And I want to just recognize our mayor here. We've had a great working relationship, very accessible to one another, and trying to get some priorities moved ahead here for the central part of the state in this area. And I also want to recognize Matt McCoy as well. You know the door is always open. And if you don't want to walk in a parade for him, I'll be at that same parade. we have better candy to throw. So as I go around to the 16 counties, you know, every month, and sometimes it's town halls. I do a town hall in every county. Breakfast like this, I'll meet with farm bureaus, classes at school, that kind of thing. And the issues that I'm hearing about are really three issues I boil down to: security. Economic security is the first one. As you know, or if you don't know, in rural Iowa, in the agricultural areas, ag income was down a third last year. That's a real gut punch to anybody or anyone, whether in the rural areas or urban areas. Just imagine your paycheck being cut by a third any given time. And so rural Iowa has its challenges, but we're still strong, and the strength of rural Iowa, it kind of reciprocates into the urban areas as well for the overall health of the state. And here in central Iowa, you know, our financial services industry, healthcare industry is doing some great things, service industry, to help keep our state moving forward as well. And what an amazing story that this community has had, Central Iowa, Des Moines community. When I went to Drake University, we wouldn't go to East Village for anything but the Olympic Flame for cheap Greek food and the pawn shop to sell a guitar for beer money. That was pretty much what it boiled down to. And then you got out of there as fast as you could. Median income has been down, not down, but has not moved over really the past decade and a half. And so you ask yourself, well, what can be done to help that? And for Washington, D.C., some of the people think they have all the answers out there, and I would disagree with that. My theory is you want to empower people to have a level, fair playing field and bring them certainty and accountability with what Washington is doing, right? So I talked about rules and regulations. They're pouring out at an unprecedented pace from this administration, but they've also poured out at an unprecedented pace from other administrations, Republican and Democrat alike. And specifically, at the end of any administration, you're going to see them coming out more and more and more. Some of you are involved in the financial service or investment advice industry. You've heard about the Department of Labor's fiduciary standard, where they want to dictate how investment advice is given. Now, I don't mind if we have that debate, but I think it should be done within Congress. Because when you have these issues debated within Congress, you're going to get some accountability at some point, right? And what's that accountability? If we vote on those issues, eventually it's called elections, right? You can do something about it. But when these rules and regulations pour out, we don't even know who's writing them at times, right? When you do business, you have to put your name on it. You have to own it. When I introduce a bill or an amendment, I got to put my name on it. But when rules and regulations come out, as well as intended that they may be, I think we should know who's writing them. I have a bill called the Fingerprints Act, and it simply says this: under any administration, any department or agency, whatever rule or regulation comes out of any bureau or commission, the people who write it, they should put their name on it, and they should own it. Because when you do that, I think when you put your name on something, you're going to offer a better product, and there's going to be accountability in there and transparency. And also, I think it's important to know a little bit about who they are and make sure that they are experts in their field. So you want to have their title and credentials as well. Because as many times, and it's happened on both sides of the aisle in the administrations, there's more political science being issued out through rules and regulations than sound science. And we want to make sure that we adhere to sound science when we make these decisions. And in addressing rules and regulations, one of the first things we did last February of 2015 was take up a bill called the RAINS Act, as in rein in rules and regulations, right? It simply said this: any rule or regulation that comes out under any administration, if it has a certain economic effect of $100 million or more, and that's going to be 90-some percent of your rules and regulations, then Congress has to vote on it. And when Congress has to vote on it, then you see where people come down to on this. Somebody owns it in the end. And if you don't like it, or you do, you can do something about it at the ballot box. As well, taxes, 75,000 pages in your tax code. If you're having a bill, if you're having insomnia, having trouble sleeping at night, I mean, just pull that tax code out, and by the end of page one, you'll be sleeping. Hopefully, you won't be having nightmares. But it does, in some way, give some folks nightmares, in a way, in their daily lives, because a lot of the tax code is just patchwork. It expires here or there in 1 or 2 years, and there's no real certainty out there to know how to invest or what to do with all that capital you may have on the side saving to invest to start a small business. If you're an entrepreneur, if you want to grow your larger business, having a tax code that is certain with permanence, I think is very important, because then you can make those correct economic decisions for yourself and your family. And you would see this economy just boom, just really boom. And we need jobs and good paying jobs. And I think they're there if we had some certainty within the tax code. National security. So economic security, national security. National security has ebbed in some ways to personal security because about what's going on around the world. People are really concerned about what's happening overseas regarding terrorism, and then here on our shores, right? Most recently overseas, we saw what happened in Istanbul. Recently here, we saw what happened in Orlando. That was a pure act of hate. Hate towards our freedoms, our way of life, hate of America. And we need to take terrorism on in a big and bold way. And I'll work with anybody on either side of the aisle. If the president needs certain tools, I think Congress is there for him, right? We're there. We want to take on this enemy, and they're not going anywhere until we do something about it. And we do something about it as well with a coalition. We need to make sure that we have allies invested in this, as well as the countries who are in the Middle East, where a lot of this is sparking from, right? We need to make sure that they have skin in the game. The president, he issued an authorization use of military force over a year ago. It basically was a resolution to take on ISIS. It's not moved in Congress. I think that's very unfortunate. For some, it doesn't go far enough. For some, it may go too far. But I don't think, with a lot of people are say on both sides of the aisle, well, we'll just wait for a new president and we'll deal with that then. But I think we need to deal with this now. We should have dealt with it a year ago. And so I think when Congress works with the president on national security issues, good things can happen. We can lead. The world is looking for leadership on this issue. And I think that we should take that up and just let the votes fall where they may. But Congress does have a role in this, and I think it's very important. Securing our constitutional rights, economic security, national security, personal security, and securing our economic, our constitutional rights. People are concerned about the size of government and the role of government in their lives at times. Sure, government is necessary, but we want to make sure that we're adhering to our constitutional rights. And I think of a regulation that's come out, and it may not impact so much of what's going on here, but it does in some ways, and I'll tell you how. That is the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, issued a rule called Waters of the USA, which re-regulates 97% of Iowa's land. To me, that's a private property issue because a bureaucracy starting to tell Iowans what they want to do, what they can do with their land, specifically agriculture land, which is the lifeblood of our economy. I think that's an issue that if it's going to be taken up again, let's do it in Congress, where there's going to be accountability, where people can own that in the end, and the people can see where people come down on that issue. When they ruled out that issue, they really didn't take into account the stakeholders here in Iowa or anywhere else and sit down with them and say, hey, how would this impact you? But it's not just agriculture. If you're involved in any kind of development or construction, it can matter in those ways as well. If you want to expand areas around your Des Moines or Central Iowa or any other community, are you going to have to go to the EPA to get some kind of permit and review every time you want to build out a new development, something like that? As well, so that right is a big concern for folks, as well as free speech rights. A few years ago, we saw that the IRS was intimidating conservative groups because of their assembly and political beliefs. That's wrong. If it was a Republican administration doing that to liberal or Democratic groups, it would be just as wrong, right? I mean, we fled the monarchy, right, for our First Amendment rights, and to be allowed to do that. And so wherever it's coming from, we have to maintain our First Amendment rights. Some of the things that I've been doing, I started a bipartisan caucus on protecting identity theft and personal fraud. This is a real issue. I don't know if you've heard about it, but I hear about it a lot in the district. Okay, so there's the grandparent scam. Have you heard about this? There are some nefarious people out there who are just wicked, in my opinion. Grandparents will get a phone call, maybe in the middle of the night, and it'll sound like their grandchild, and they're, for whatever reason, the person on the other end of the line knows the name of that grandchild, and they will pretend to be that grandchild, and they'll say, Grandpa and Grandma, I'm down here in Cancun on spring break, got a little problem, I don't want to call Mom and Dad, can you wire and send $2,000 down to take care of this issue, because I need help. And what grandparent wouldn't do that if they thought it was their grandchild? And I've heard of that happening. It's happened. Real scams out there. The other scam that happened a few months ago was the big spring break scam. Now, maybe you didn't get this call. I didn't get this call either. But it was basically calls to high school juniors and seniors saying, hey, this is such and such with world travel, spring break time. We got 10 rooms down here in Cancun at $25 a room, 5 nights a week, last night's free, but they're going quickly. And we can do airfare as well at the cheap level. So if you give us your credit card information now, we can book this for you, and people will do that. So be very careful about those phone calls and those emails. And I will also let you know that there's a lot of folks out there who pretend to be from the IRS, and they'll call up businesses and individuals, and they'll say, you're delinquent on your taxes. We found this error. We did an audit on you remotely. And if you don't pay this now, you know, you're going to face jail time. And people would give their personal financial information over the phone. I will let you know right now that the IRS, if they ever have an issue with you, they're going to use snail mail. They're going to mail you. Okay? So if someone from the IRS calls, just see where they're calling from, maybe, and report them. Or just leave the phone on the table and let them talk forever so they're not scamming someone else. But it's serious stuff. And so I started this bipartisan caucus with Democrat Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. She's a great friend, and we have a great working relationship together. And we got an amendment passed just recently on a defense authorization bill to help protect our service members who are getting scammed. And we want to make sure that those men and women who are on the front lines overseas fighting for us, that they didn't have to worry about what was going on back home with their family and financial situation. So we directed the Department of Defense to put in quality assurances in place to make sure that the financial and personal information of those serving in the military are protected. And that passed, and I'm hopeful that that will get signed into law as we move down the road here in Congress. On that RAINS Act I told you about, the regulatory bill, I had an amendment that was accepted to that was pretty simple, I thought, but some found it controversial. But it did pass, and it said this: also, any rule or regulation that comes out from any agency when they refer to certain studies and data and science, well, to make that decision, well, they have to make that also transparent and available to the general public as well. So we can all see it and understand how they got to where they got to. And so I think that's very important that we're all on the same page on that. You may have heard a few months ago about the Veteran Suicide Prevention Line at the VA. Veterans with some real emotional and mental war wounds were calling that line, and that line would just ring and ring and ring. Sometimes it would go unanswered. Sometimes people would answer it, take a message, never get back to them. It would go to voicemail. It would be transferred into cyberspace. That's unacceptable. We need to make sure that we take care of the health needs and benefits of our members physically as well, emotionally as well. And so I quickly introduced a bill. It's pretty simple in its title. It's called No Calls Shall Go Unanswered to the Veterans Crisis Line Act. You know, you hear all these acronyms out there. And that makes sure that the Veterans Administration puts in those quality assurances and protocols in place and reports to Congress what they are and if there are any needs that need to be put into law to make sure that those protocols are put in place so that veterans can reach a real human being, right? And so that bill was taken up last week in the Veterans Affairs Committee, and it's on track to get through full committee and eventually to the floor. But that really struck home to me when, about a month ago, we have a caseworker. So we have an office in Des Moines, Creston, and Council Bluffs. And, you know, whether you have an issue with taxes or veterans benefits or Social Security, we want to be there to advocate for you with the federal government because it's kind of big and bureaucratic and we know how to get through that maze. But we had a gentleman, a veteran, who had some issues emotionally, and we had a case open for him, and he was fed up, and he called the Veteran Suicide Prevention Crisis Line 4 times, no answer, and thankfully he had the phone number of our caseworker, and he called her, and fortunately she had a background in behavioral counseling and was able to ease his burden at that moment. But you think, what would have happened if maybe she wasn't there? And we're losing 22 veterans a day over suicide. Some of the toughest meetings I've ever had are with parents whose children are not veterans, but still within the military who have chosen to take their life away. And that's tough, and our veterans and current service members deserve those mental health needs today. I hear about mental health issues all over the district, and I don't know if more and more people are experiencing some of the stresses and traumas of life and aren't able to handle it so well sometimes, or if people are more comfortable talking about it. But it's an important issue. And when we get back to D.C., we'll be taking up a mental health bill for services. It's a bipartisan bill, and we need to address this. And it's bipartisan, and I believe the president's spoken up on this and would like to help get this signed into law as well and be part of the solution. Bill, you mentioned no budget, no pay. I didn't know you were going to do that, and I wasn't going to talk about that, but I'll mention how and why that is an issue for me. I believe in fiscal sanity. You probably all do too. I hope you do. You know, when you have issues with your personal budget or your business and you have issues with the budget and your financial situation, The first piece of advice that you're going to get from a financial advisor is what? Do you have a budget? Well, if you wonder how we've got to a $19 trillion debt, if you don't have budgets, you kind of end up just spending into oblivion without any real checks and balances there. And so April 15th came along, and that is the date within law where you're supposed to have a budget. I'm also a co-sponsor of a bill called No Budget, No Pay. And when April 16th came along, you know, I did some soul searching and said, you know, am I going to mean what I say what I mean, and back this up? And so I decided to follow that No Budget, No Pay Act, which means that you have your pay withdrawn until you get a budget. And didn't make me too popular with some of my colleagues because they started hearing about it back from their constituents. But I said to them, well, if it's an issue, well, then help me push leadership to get a budget done or follow the same suit. In Iowa, I think this is the philosophy. Tell me if I'm wrong. If you don't get your job done, you shouldn't get paid until you do get it done. And so I'm trying to lead on this issue just out of principle, and I think it's what Iowans expect. So thank you for the breakfast. You did put it away. But there's some muffins over there. This is Andy. Andy has pockets. You know, there's some working groups right now. We've laid out an agenda for certain issues, one on taxes, one on regulations, one on health care, one on Article 1, Section 8, restoring the power of Congress into the appropriations and spending process, and Homeland Security, national security as well. These are some working groups in Congress. We've laid out some white papers, and we're probably not going to form them into legislative initiatives. But they're out there to show the American people that we do have ideas. We're not, and I'm not just, you know, saying no all the time doesn't get you anywhere, right? You got to be for something at some point. And so it's good to have things out there and show the American people that they have choices, that there are issues out there that they can look at, distinguish between parties and even subgroups within the parties. And so we're hoping whoever the next president is will work with us on that issue. Your guess is as good as mine who that's going to be, because I don't know. There you go. I said I'm not going to Cleveland for the convention because it's Cleveland. And I want to be in Iowa, right? This is home for me. The way you're going to get things done in D.C. is the way we get things done here at home. And that is in a bipartisan fashion. We don't have to give up your principles, your mores, your faith, your ideals. Compromise to some can be a real dirty word, but it shouldn't be. Because I'll give you an example. The president talked about lowering the corporate tax rate. I probably want to lower it further down than him. But let's say he wants to bring it down to 30 and I want to bring it to 20. I'll meet him at 25%. I mean, that's not selling your soul. That's honorable compromise on both sides. And so that's how you're going to get things done. The Congress is not veto-proof, so you can try to pass all the symbolic and sometimes very substantive issues in Congress, and it goes nowhere. But we want to get things to the President's desk. We found some areas to work with him on. We want to continue to do that. And whoever has the majority in Congress, you know, we find ourselves Republicans in the minority, I'll still be at the table trying to work. You got to be at the table. If you're not at the table, then your lunch, really. And I vow to be one of those people who are pragmatic and solutions-oriented. And you hear a lot on talk radio or cable television, people screaming and yelling. Those are not the people who are at the table where the solutions are made. And I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to ostracize myself. Because if I do, I ostracize the 3rd District, and I want to give this district, the 16 counties, a voice. So I want to thank you for allowing me to be here today. If you ever have any issues, we have the Crescent office, Council Bluffs, and Des Moines office. And we want to be helpful. And if you ever find yourself in D.C., please come and see us. We want to make sure that we take care of you and you have a great experience. Just one word of advice, bring comfortable shoes because it's a lot of walking. And with that, thank you very much for allowing me to be here. And if we have time, I'll be glad to take some questions. Yes, sir. What's your name?
Bruce Lance.
Hey, Bruce.
Thank you for coming and thank you for sharing. Last weekend, you had an opportunity to participate in some sensible gun legislation, which I think is incredibly important on these days, and I'd just like to get your take on that.
Sure. What happened in Orlando, Fort Hood, Chattanooga, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, there's too many to think of right now. We all want to see an end to this gun violence. We don't want terrorists to have guns, that's for sure. There were a couple amendments four amendments altogether that went up in the Senate and all failed. I want to keep guns out of the hand of terrorists. I also want to make sure that if there are some innocent Americans on some of the watch lists, that they have due process as well. When we get back, I think our leadership, and I've talked to them over the weekend, they have a commitment to bring some of these things up. But we want to take some little time to look and study these things. But I'll be at the table for any common sense solutions to stop this. And so and we had some people who stopped in our office earlier this week on this issue. Unfortunately, I was, fortunately, because I need to keep a commitment, I was down in Clarinda. Who's from Clarinda here? There you are, yeah. I was not at the Indeclare bar like we talked about, but we're going to bring some issues up. We also want to make sure that law enforcement has the proper tools, because what happened with this Mateen guy with three FBI investigations behind him and him being allowed to get that weapon, it shakes my head. So we're going to get briefed as well by the administration on this. Thanks for bringing that up.
Jim Ferguson, you spoke just now of having common sense solutions to gun safety. Would you be very specific in terms of what you consider to be common sense solutions? And would you also let us know, are you initiating legislation to put a halt to the sale of assault weapons?
I want to make sure that people's constitutional rights are protected. And unfortunately, the weapons you're talking about, if they're banned, they're going to be on a black market. And so if we can enhance background checks, and I know that this is an issue that's very emotional for people, but I want to keep the guns out of the hands of terrorists, and also protect people's due process and constitutional rights. We're going to have a spirited debate. And did you leave some things at the office for me and leave your contact information? Because
yes, I was part of the sit-in, and I want to say that the congressman's staff was extremely gracious. They gave us two beautiful platters of pastries. They treated us they were much more civil with us than we were with them. Thank you. I was extremely impressed with the efficiency of your office and how careful your staff was to listen to us. Thank you.
Did your response mean that regular people should be allowed to have assault weapons? That sounds what you're saying.
Well, under the Heller decision and the Constitution, they are allowed to right now. I'll be glad to have the debate.
Nobody has the right to have assault weapons unless you're in the army of your country. I mean, you don't go out shooting deer with the AR, 15 or anything, or 16. Why are those even allowed? Why can they sell them at the state? There's things that can be sold here in Iowa. At the fairgrounds, you can't even allow to own knives and stuff that are too long. They can be sold here, but they can't, what's with that?
I understand the spiritedness of this. I do. We got the gentleman, then you? Okay.
Oops. I'm real interested when you're talking about the room full of sexual minorities, how you feel about the transgender issue that came before Congress recently. How you voted, how you changed your vote, what caused you to change, where you're at now, how you want to proceed from here.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to address that. There was a lot of confusion on this issue. The vote you're talking about was not about transgender. It was about an executive order by the president in 2014 regarding hiring practices with federal contractors. And a vote came up by Maloney at the last second, and nobody really had a chance to look at the amendment. And I assumed it did one thing, but it didn't. I wanted to make sure that for some of our faith-based groups, religious organizations who federally contract, that they had their personal individual religious First Amendment rights protected. It did not, and so I voted no. When it came up again in another bill, when those protections were put on there, I voted for that along with the sponsor of the amendment, Maloney. And so, thanks for bringing that up. This gentleman,
The next AR-15 that's purchased and used against people, can we hold you personally accountable for those deaths if you're allowing that AR-15 to be bought?
I think the person that should be personally accountable is the person who performed that.
But you're allowing it to be bought.
I understand where you're coming from.
You're killing him.
Go ahead.
Yeah, too often I think we get into discussions about specifics rather than taking a look at the larger issue. When we're talking about gun safety and the use of guns in committing crimes and atrocities, we get into very small specifics about should we regulate this gun? How many bullets should a person be able to buy? Rather than discussing what is the big issue, it's just what does that amendment to the Constitution mean? And if we don't discuss that and shy away from that, if we use that as an excuse rather than just opening up that discussion, then we're not going to get anywhere.
Thank you for your comment, sir.
Bruce Wilson, you mentioned the issue of the so-called religious freedom. And frankly, 50 years ago or more, we heard these same arguments about religious freedom involving race, interracial marriage, and everything else. What we are seeing is it's not religious freedom. You can practice your religion any way you want to. The problem we are seeing, and the argument we're having again, is one of who's imposing whose religious beliefs on whom, and what is the proper role of religion in a secular society. So when you are holding yourself out to do business with the world as a whole, you cannot legally practice your religion by discriminating against people. And like I say, we're hitting the same thing that we had 50 years ago. You can take the same argument here today, substitute the N-word, and it's all over again. So now, what is the real role of, quote, religious freedom, religious discrimination in the whole civil rights movement?
I think that debate's ongoing. And it's a conversation that I hear about here at home, in Congress as well. The courts I think ultimately the courts are going to be deciding on this issue in the end. Yes, sir. Back here first, he raised his hand.
Hi, I'm Tim Schreck from Des Moines.
Hey, Tim.
And one of the things that you mentioned was back in the day when it was kind of scary to go to the East Village, you know, because they went for Greek food and they got out of there. It just struck me that most of the people in this room, that was the only place they could go to have a night together at a gay bar. So I'm wondering if that was part of your fear going to East Village. And the irony now of the fact that that bar is one of the few surviving institutions from 30 years ago.
There weren't a lot of street lights, and I didn't have a lot of gas left in my tank to get home. But you know, if you looked statistically, there was more just crime around that area. That was why.
Yeah, we all knew that.
Yeah. One here, and then back here.
Yeah, Congressman, there are a couple of presidential campaigns going on.
Only two.
And I see the Republican incumbents, the leadership, dividing up into roughly the two camps, those that are backing or endorsing Donald Trump. At the risk of exposing my own personal bias, I would find that as placing party over country. And the other group is distancing themselves from Trump, and I'll describe that as putting country over party. And so my question is, where are you falling into that spectrum?
Well, I guess it's assumed that Trump is the presumptive nominee. And we had 17 people in the primary. I kind of think that was too many. I scratch my head when I hear some of the things that come out of Donald Trump. And I know a lot of you do, too. Maybe you bang your head against the wall, and some people do. He's running for president. I'm not. But when he's likely going to be the nominee of the party. When he has said some things that I disagree with, I've disagreed with him publicly, particularly the one about the, banning all Muslims. We shouldn't have a religious litmus test when it comes to folks coming to America. A recent one was regarding the Hispanic judge. I mean, your birthright and your ethnicity should not be a precursor, a prefactor in how you would perform your job. I'm not running for president. I'm really not focusing on what he's doing. I'll continue to speak out independently, like Iowans do, on issues where I disagree with him. He's more likely to sign into some things into law that we're passing in Congress. I'll just leave it to the hands of the American people.
So country over party. You aren't running for president, but you are in Congress. And so you've mentioned EPA, you've mentioned DOL, you've mentioned your concern that Congress didn't act on the war powers for ISIS that were put before you. So if some of the vote that's surging for Trump is because there's a do nothing Washington or a do nothing Congress, you can comment on that. And I'd like your comment on what Congress is doing that's maybe, or not doing maybe, that's making Trump possible.
I don't know if there is a connection. Maybe people don't see Congress doing enough, right? And we are in a divide, but let's remember we're in a divided government, right? We're not veto-proof in Congress. In the Senate, first of all, in the House, the rules are, the Constitution says you create your own rules in the House, and it's just majority rules, as you know. In the Senate, they create their own rules, and you got to get to 60 votes to even proceed to an issue, right? I'll let you question your senators on that issue, but that, over in the House, we don't really have anything to say with that. There have been some areas where we have come together, and the president has signed some things into law. The big issues that I'm concerned about that I hear about from Iowans, unfortunately, they're not getting addressed, and that is the economic issues. The fact that we're at $19 trillion in debt and wanting to make sure that we deal with spending in a constructive and productive way, it's not going to be an easy path to get to a balanced budget. And you have to remember as well that 70% of every dollar is mandatory spending. That means in law it has to be spent. And these are specifically Social Security and Medicare. We need to make sure that we strengthen and modernize those. Some people look at what happened over at with Brexit, right? And then see if there's any correlation. I don't know. I'm not kind of a pundit on that issue, but some people have said that there's a reflection of what's going on here, maybe, with what's happening over there. But if you believe that, that's why we have elections, right? And if you don't like what's going on, I always tell people, then run for office. That's why I ran. Or find somebody and back them or advocate for them. But their responsibility is held, and it's at the ballot box. This gentleman had his hand up first, and then I'll go back over here.
Before I get to my question, just to clarify, what he was actually asking you was, would you or do you plan to vote for Donald Trump? And you did not answer that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was assumed. I'm sorry. I did not endorse during the primary, but I have said that I'm in the end, whoever it is, I'm going to support my nominee.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
My question is straightforward. Have you ever accepted contributions from the NRA?
I believe they have donated to me. But I want to tell you that.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Ask an answer.
Well, you. But I can further comment, right? I can't. I thought free speech.
Good.
But But I tell you,
nope.
I've never solicited from them, and they've just sent it. And I'll tell you what, I don't have a binder by my desk about who donates to me and check on it and look at legislation. I follow the law and accept contributions legally, solicit them legally, and there's no quid pro quo.
But you immediately could recall that they have donated.
Only because my opponent told me. In a press release.
Beyond the fact that immediately right now you could recall it, the second thing is you also have the right to refuse donations from anyone. So please, do not stand in this room and tell us that you don't know who donated to you and that you were forced or somehow made to accept them.
I can only tell you what I can tell you, and you can believe me or not. Thanks for the question.
Congressman Max Miller.
Hey, Max.
Thank you for joining us. The question is this, and it has to do with your response to several nonprofit organizations with which you've had the grace and willingness to meet. While hearing out these different organizations and our critical concerns with respect to legislation, you have consistently responded saying that regardless of what your personal position might be in concert or in opposition to the advocacy groups meeting with you, you will inevitably vote as leadership directs. Is there any change in that?
Nobody controls my vote. Leadership has never twisted my arm or put me in a corner and said you have to vote like this.
Okay, so you
I would be offended if they did.
Okay, so you do not follow the lead of your party's leadership.
I don't have 100% voting record with my party or leadership. And to get things done, many times I'm going to the other side of the aisle to get things done. If you check about my some of the things I've done and the successes on them.
Congressman?
Yeah.
After the incident in Orlando, the terrorist attack there, it was horrific. And those who survived, who went to work on Monday morning, could have been fired or without any legal recourse whatsoever because they were seen on camera and it was known or became known that they're gay. Would you be willing to support and even sponsor enactment of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that has been before Congress repeatedly and has failed to pass?
I'd be glad to take a look at that. I will tell you this, that I see value and dignity in everybody, regardless of their economic background, race, sexuality. Doesn't matter to me. I believe in treating people with kindness and fairness and respect and equal treatment under the law. And so I'll have that conversation. I'd be glad to.
Is that a yes or no?
Well, you know, I'm always hesitant to say I'm going to endorse this or that because I want to have the debate and look at the language. I'm kind of a wonk in that way.
The language was asked, Jonathan just asked, would you support or not?
I would like to look at the bill.
Do you agree with the Pentagon decision that was announced as recently as yesterday that openly trans members of our military will be allowed to serve openly and they will be using restrooms and showers that correspond to the gender that they present?
God bless anybody who wants to sign up and fight for our country, and I don't have a problem with it. You know, you want to make sure that the commanders and generals and Secretary of Defense are the ones who really have the insights in making the decisions there.
Other questions?
Why is it that you don't need to look at the language when it comes to the ownership of a weapon as has been described? You need to look at the language associated with the question that Jonathan asked.
Well, one thing is legislation and one is not. One I would have a say on. I'll let Jonathan pick who's next. Or
right over here. Yes. My name is Don Jones. I'm from Leon, on Iowa.
Hey, Don.
This concerns the Iowa values that you were talking about with Senator Grassley's decision not to have the SCOTUS nominee brought up for a vote. Do you support or not support his decision to do that?
I'm just glad the U.S. House of Representatives, one, is not involved in that issue. Because, I just want the Constitution to be followed on this, and that is the President nominates somebody. And then the Senate has, they can advise and consent and vote yes, advise and consent and vote no, or they can do nothing. Whoever, I tell you what I want to see in a nominee, is a Supreme Court nominee, somebody who's a strict originalist constitutionalist. Many of you may not, and we have our philosophical views and debates on that issue, but I will tell you that whoever the next president is, they're probably going to get, what do you think, maybe three Supreme Court shots at the bench, and then that really will direct the nation, I think, for a generation and a half.
One more question? Anyone?
Right over here.
Oh, one more.
Right here. Yes.
Neil O'Sullivan.
Hey, Neil.
Congressman, so your belief in the inaction of the Senate, I think, speaks volumes. Why are we frustrated? Because of inaction. Congressman, that may be Senator Grassley's downfall.
Yes.
You should let him know that. You should invite him.
He will buy our votes.
There you go. And and he said we will buy our votes. And you know what? That's self-government. This is what this is all about in the end. People have the ability to change the direction. Some people have come to me and said, "Why you run every 2 years? You should run every 4 years." And I said, "That's ridiculous," because you want to make sure that people have a choice sooner rather than later to help chart the course or change things if they don't like what's going on. Thank you for letting me be here this morning. I appreciate it. And have a good day.
I want to thank you for joining us. It is a tradition to give a token of appreciation to our speakers. And this is a recording of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus.
Okay, thank you.
We hope that you enjoy listening to that. You may not want some of your colleagues to see you doing so, but you will find it a very good CD.
I want to look at the song. I was looking at the songs. In high school, I was in all-state chorus, and so I love music and I love to sing, and creativity is part of my outlet in all this. So thank you for letting me be here.
This is our congressman. The fact of the matter is that it took great courage for him to accept our invitation to come and speak to this group that has been singled out and discriminated against historically, not just by others in our society, but by government itself. I appreciate the spirit and the spirited questions and his willingness to come and field those questions.
And I do too. I want you to know.
The fact of the matter is that this is the 4th of July weekend, and I thought that there was some potential for fireworks here, and it seems fitting for the congressman to join us. Your coming here ranks right up there in courage with Bishop Pates of the Archdiocese when he came and met with us, I think. His institution that he represents also has been a problem for our community. And we appreciate the work that you are doing, and we appreciate particularly your willingness to come and have an interaction with us here. You spent 7 years or so as chief of staff to Senator Grassley, so perhaps you have his ear. I was particularly intrigued by the flyer that I received from you. If you don't do your job, you don't get paid. It struck me that you may not have cleared that with Senator Grassley before sending it out.
He's in the first district.
I'm a lawyer, and I know that the Supreme Court is currently dysfunctional. And Congress has been guilty of threatening the full faith and credit of the United States government in terms of funding. And when Congress doesn't act to fill a full Supreme Court, it makes the judicial branch of government dysfunctional. And I believe that that's a real problem. And maybe if you have his ear, you'd send a message to him that we'd sort of like to see him do his job. Thank you. I thank you again, though, for being here. It took great courage, and that's what it's all about, after all, and I appreciate it. Okay, next, we're going to want to see all of you back here in August. The presenter in August is going to be Shadley Gree, who is actually in attendance here today. And he is going to he's a filmmaker and a performance artist. And his play that I announced the name of earlier has gotten rave reviews. And it says that Gree has pulled off an inspiring play that gives all of us kids who were ignored, bullied, or hurt in any way a big, fat, understanding hug. You're left with an unlikely sense of belonging and a powerful belief in one of the truest statements of the play. Fiction needs nuance. Reality just wants to F asterisk CK with you, unquote. It should be an intriguing play, and it should be an intriguing presentation at our meeting on August 5th. On September the 2nd, our speaker is going to be Jack Schuler. Many of you will have seen him mentioned in a huge spread that the Des Moines Register did on trans members of the Iowa community. He is a trans male high school teacher at Lincoln High School here in Des Moines, teaching English. His listing on their directory and his email are still in his former name, Elise Schuler. Because the school district has said that they won't change the listing until he's had his name legally changed. But at least they do call him Jack when he walks into the schoolroom. It seemed like a worthwhile person for us to hear from here at the club. And I hope that all of you will be back on August the 5th and September the 2nd. And I particularly want to thank you for being here this morning to join with Congressman David Young. Thank you for being here.